from Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
And thanks very much, Ollie. I tell you what, we've had biblical rain here. Biblical type rain in Manchester. It began raining overnight. It's been absolutely lashing it down all day long. And we've got it for the next couple of days as well, I believe. Anyway, it's Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. How are you? Welcome to it.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
And you've only got me for an hour today, but an hour is a long time. And today, for sure, less is more. Less is more. Much more today.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
As usual, if you'd like to talk to me, you can do so directly through Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you today, Thursday, December 5th, 2018. And I've got a really interesting news lineup for you. Political analysis, geopolitical analysis, the likes of which you will not hear anywhere else today in this country, at least I can say anyway. Are you well? Have you had a good day despite the rain? Of course, you might be listening to the show overseas where the weather might be much better than it is here. The weather, the last refuge of the emotionally incapable of holding a conversation with a perfect stranger. Let's talk about the weather. Let's avoid any awkwardness. Let's talk about the weather. Yeah, this has been absolutely miserable today. What makes me laugh is I live in this, it's not a cul-de-sac, but it's a side street. And a few weeks ago, a company called Kylie's, I think it might not be, it might be Kylie's. They put signs on the end of the road, signs saying, in 4 days' time, we're going to resurface the road. And they gave the dates sometime around mid-November. Anyway, the day arrived and the lorries with the steamrollers and all the tarmac didn't arrive. They just didn't show up. Nothing wrong now, mind. There was nothing, there was no weather issues, nothing. They just never showed up. Anyway, on Monday, 2 days ago, along came the builders. And they put signs down on the road to say, don't park here. Park your cars on the drive. We will come and resurface the road on Wednesday, December 5th. It arrived this morning. No sign of the builders. Although, presumably, road workers, we should call them. Highway maintenance people. Presumably, it's because it is belting it down. And maybe it's not ideal conditions to sort out the road surface. All right. Oh, the things that amuse me. Shall we talk a little Brexit? Shall we? Let's talk about a little Brexit. I don't think it's too dull today. In case you missed it yesterday, the government, that is Theresa May's minority government, the Hung Parliament government, back to a minority government now that the DUPs have withdrawn their support. The government lost 3 votes yesterday in the Commons. And the UK media was very quick today to say that this was mayhem and humiliation for Theresa May. But what does any of it mean? Well, she lost a vote on the legal advice by Geoffrey Cox. There was a motion put forward that the government was in contempt of Parliament. That motion was carried. That hasn't happened ever, apparently. But the most important one was when the pro-European Tory, Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General, he won support for his amendment, which will give Parliament a direct say in what happens if and when Theresa May's deal is rejected in the MP vote next Tuesday. Meaning that when, not if, Theresa May's withdrawal agreement with the EU, when it is rejected by MPs next Tuesday, effectively, members of Parliament will then take over. And Parliament no longer has to take note of what Theresa May tells it. MPs can basically take over the process and they can vote on what they want the government to do. So the prospect of leaving with no deal, which is a great idea, which would be the only proper way to leave, will be gone. Now, Liam Fox is a Conservative MP, of course, former front bench minister. He's a Brexiteer, is Liam Fox, allegedly. And he fears that Remain MPs, because don't forget, there are more Remain-supporting MPs in Westminster than there are those who favour leaving. So he fears that Remain MPs will now have the pathway to basically stop Brexit. Here's Liam Fox.
I want the government's deal to go through. Just to clarify that answer, I think that there is, as I have written recently, a real danger that the House of Commons, which has a natural Remain majority, may attempt to steal Brexit from the British people, which I think would be a democratic affront.
There's no maybe about it. Of course that's what they're going to do. They're rubbing their hands gleefully. This is it. This is one of the scenarios that I outlined way back when this all began. This is one of the scenarios. They'll basically wrestle control of the process back from May, after next Tuesday, when the agreement that May made with the European Union will be voted down. MPs will take over and can then direct the course that the government must take. Loverly, chubberly, if you're a Remain MP. So every Wednesday, the Prime Minister takes to the dispatch box and she faces questions from members of Parliament. She gets a series of questions from Jeremy Corbyn and a number of questions from around the House. Jeremy Corbyn used these questions today to highlight the devastating consequences of universal credit on the poor. Understandably, wise choice probably. No point in Corbyn banging on about Brexit today when debates began yesterday and will go on all week until next Tuesday's vote. So no point in getting into that. Corbyn's points on universal credit and the damage it's doing to people and how many people are going to have no money at Christmas, which for most of us, or for many of us, is unimaginable. Most of us don't have much, right? Most of us don't have much, but we have enough to put a bit of food on the table on Christmas Day. There will be hundreds of thousands of people in this country who won't have that. Corbyn made the point today that emergency measures should be introduced like yesterday to make sure that people are not left penniless at Christmas. So he avoided Brexit during Prime Minister's questions. But not the SNP leader, that's the Scottish National Party leader in Westminster, Ian Blackford. He took it upon himself to challenge Theresa May. He was a bit miffed, was Ian Blackford, and he challenged Theresa May's personal integrity. About what? Well, Theresa May's Brexit backstop plan, which has been the subject of never-ending talk for the last few weeks and months, you could say. We heard that Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General and Conservative MP, so would be an ally of Theresa May, he gave legal advice to the government, to Theresa May, about the agreement that she made with the European Union. And in that legal advice, he said that this Brexit backstop plan risks a stalemate and protracted rounds of negotiations with the European Union. He also said to Geoffrey Cox that the arrangement was designed to prevent a hard Irish border, but it could last indefinitely, and that the UK could not lawfully exit it without EU agreement. This is very important. It's central. This backstop thing is a nonsense, designed to prevent a hard Irish border. It's just a nonsense. There's no need for it. Right. But in the agreement May made with the European Union, it means this backstop could last indefinitely and that the UK cannot leave that arrangement without express consent from the European Union. This is what her own Attorney General told her, Geoffrey Cox. He presented that legal opinion on the withdrawal agreement to Theresa May, and until today, Theresa May wouldn't publish it. But as I said, Parliament voted to hold the government in contempt last night, one of the three big defeats I mentioned earlier on, and she published it today. The Democratic Unionist Party, which were propping up the government, said this arrangement that cannot be vacated by the United Kingdom would be devastating for the UK And it means the DUP is withdrawing its support for the Conservative Party. So as I said, ministers were forced to publish the full advice today after they were found in contempt of Parliament. Here is Ian Blackford. Just to remind you again, he's the Scottish National Party leader in Westminster. Here is Ian Blackford's rather testy exchange with Theresa May, some of it anyway, where he challenges her personal integrity.
Ian Blackford.
Mr. Speaker, that is an incredibly disappointing response from the Prime Minister. The facts have had to be dragged out of this government by Parliament. Mr. Speaker, this morning we have seen the detail of the legal advice. We have seen the facts that the government tried to hide. Mr. Speaker, this government is giving Northern Ireland permanent membership of the single market and the customs union. The legal advice is clear. It states, despite statements in the protocol that is not intended to be permanent, in international law, the protocol would endure indefinitely. Since the Prime Minister returned from Brussels with her deal, the Prime Minister has been misleading the House inadvertently or otherwise. The Prime Minister must explain.
Order. You can't say that. Berko jumps in. Inadvertently or otherwise. Theresa May has misled Parliament inadvertently or otherwise. You can't say that. Don't even hint that Theresa May has lied. No inference will be tolerated.
The Right Honourable Gentleman must make it clear that there is no suggestion that the government is misleading the House deliberately. There can be no question of that. If the Right Honourable Gentleman wants to use the word inadvertently, which people do now and again, he can, but there must be no ambiguity on the point. And I ask the Right Honourable Gentleman to clarify that matter and to order. No, I don't need any advice from anyone. I know exactly what I'm doing, and the Right Honourable Gentleman must comply. Mr. Ian Blackford.
Comply, you mad Scottish haggis, comply. Don't call May a big fat lying cow. Liar, your pants is on fire. Given a chance to retract, back to Ian Blackford.
Mr. Speaker, I did use the word inadvertently, and I repeat it. That since the Prime Minister has returned from Brussels with her deal, the Prime Minister has been misleading the House, perhaps inadvertently. The Prime Minister...
Blasphemy! He said it again! Did you hear him?
Did you hear him? He said perhaps inadvertently, perhaps given the opportunity to retract the inference that May is a liar. He said it again. Back to Berko.
Order. I always want the Right Honourable Gentleman to be heard fully, and he will be, but there can be no imputation of dishonour.
None.
And the insertion of the word perhaps suggests the Right Honourable Gentleman wants to keep his options open. The option of imputing dishonour does not exist. That word must now be removed. Please rephrase, continue and complete briefly. Mr. Ian Blackford.
Go on, Ian. Say it again. One more time, suggest that May deliberately misled Parliament. Go on, son.
Mr. Speaker, I say again, inadvertently. Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister must explain. The Prime Minister must explain why she continues to deny Scotland the rights and opportunities.
What a yellow belly. He wouldn't say it a third time. Very biblical, really, when you think about it. Who denied Jesus three times? He wouldn't say it again, would Blackford? And things just moved on. In the six-page letter published on Tuesday, the Attorney General told the government that the current drafting of the backstop doesn't allow for a mechanism that would enable the UK to lawfully exit the UK-wide customs union without consent of the European Union. It's as simple as that. Despite statements, writes Geoffrey Cox, that it is not intended to be permanent in international law, the protocol would endure indefinitely until a superseding agreement took its place. There is a legal risk that the UK might become subject to protracted and repeated rounds of negotiations. The resolution of such a stalemate would have to be political. It's been amazing this afternoon watching this unfold on UK television through Sky and BBC News 24. The anchors, you've probably seen this, the anchors, I did say anchors, are presenting every show live from Westminster, surrounded by pro- and anti-European Union protesters. There's no escape in these protesters. It's comical. In between shuffling guests on and off the temporary platforms and trying to interview them, people like Kay Burley, Adam Bolton and Laura Koonsberg are forced to repeatedly apologise for the bad language coming from the baying mob, which is only a few metres away from where they're trying to broadcast. It's comical. It's a circus, but it's great fun. Here's Kay Burley trying to chat with Bernard Jenkin. Jenkin is a long-time critic of the European Union. And May is talking with him about the possibility... Excuse me. Kay Burley is talking with him about the possibility that Theresa May could cancel next Tuesday's vote and go back to Brussels to tell them this ain't working out, nobody's going to vote for it, we're going to have to come to a different agreement. So Burley says, is that a possibility to Bernard Jenkin? We can have a bit of it. And the baying mob, well, it's funny stuff.
Is she losing control?
Well, it doesn't look very good for the Prime Minister. She's lost the support of the DUP. So in theory,
in theory,
even if all the Conservative MPs voted for this deal, without the support of the DUP, it would not go through.
Is now the time for her to stop, to pause, to not go ahead with this vote next Tuesday?
It would seem sensible for her to say, to accept... I'm sorry we're being interrupted by...
Don't ignore them. It's fine.
Well,
democratic right to protest.
It's democratic
fine,
right to protest. But
they've only just got up. They're noisy for now.
They're shouting down free speech on the media, protesters against Brexit. But that's... Unfortunately, some people are behaving in a rather extreme way. But the important consideration here is the Prime Minister should actually pause, go back to Brussels and say, look, I can't sell this to the House of Commons. At the very least, we've got to get rid of this backstop and replace it with something else.
She won't stop the vote next week. Some of the heckling I mentioned on Twitter the other day, to see Owen Jones, one of the most disgusting human beings, currently residing in the United Kingdom, horrible little snowflake, progressive, to see him trying to speak to Kay Burley yesterday and to hear perfectly clearly people shouting abuse at him was wonderful. it was wonderful. I enjoyed it. But I'm a big child sometimes, that's just me. Former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab, we're nearly done with the Brexit roundup, by the way. Former Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab was asked this morning by ITV's Piers Morgan, why not just get rid of Theresa May and deliver Brexit? Why drag all of this out? It's obvious that Theresa May is toast. Why won't the hard Brexiteers do something about what is unfolding? We can hear from Piers Morgan now and Dominic Raab.
We know, you know, I know, Theresa May is not a strong leader. She's had her chance. She's been faffing around for the last year. I wrote a column a year ago saying she should go now, a year ago, because she'll end up with a gigantic fudge on this that won't please anybody and will actually create even more division. It's exactly what's happened. I take no pride in being Mystic Morgan about all this, but I could see it coming because after the election campaign, you could see actually Theresa May was not a strong leader. Why are so many Tories right now, given this utter turmoil, given what happened last
night,
why are you still persisting in this ridiculous public position that she's the only person that can lead the country at this time? Why don't you all grow a pair and put one of yourselves in charge and actually deliver the Brexit you keep banging on that you want? One of you, do something.
I think the public would regard it as political parlour games for us to be engaging in a lot of that shenanigans rather than just focusing on the deal. I also think the Prime Minister's got every right, and this is one of the reasons I stepped down, to present her deal. But the problem is the amount of support that it will have amongst her own colleagues, but also in the House and with the public at large. So I think she's got that right, and I want her to be successful as a Prime Minister, right, but also successful at delivering.
The big worry that some people who voted for leaving the European Union have is that people like Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson and people like Dominic Raab are now going to turn 180 degrees and are actually going to vote with Theresa May on Tuesday because they're worried about Parliament getting control of the process in the event of that vote going against Theresa May next Tuesday. I don't know anything about that, whether there's any truth in that or not. I'm going to read a few tweets now as they're coming in. Andy Newman tweets, very few MPs are considering no deal as a viable option. It just shows how they are prepared to ignore public opinion. Faisal tweets, Parliament wrestling back the Brexit process lets Theresa May off the hook from being the one to stick the final knife in the nation's back. Thanks for those guys, I appreciate them. Liz tweets, it's a massive distraction, wonder what they are really up to. I don't understand that. What do you mean it's a massive distraction? People voted in 2016 to leave the European Union. Now, I understand, and I've heard the theory, that the whole referendum was a psyop on people to begin with, and that the whole thing was never serious, that it was some sort of psychological torture for the nation, give the nation the option to leave the European Union and then prevent them from leaving. I don't buy into that. People have suggested that as a theory, but they've offered no proof of it. You see, despite the control system that we talk about often, despite how its tentacles prod and poke into every aspect of life, which they do, there's no doubt about that. When it comes down to it, there are, you know, times when, I mean, you look at the Conservative Party, just to illustrate my point there. The Conservative Party, or members of that party, have been fighting over the European Union and fighting over membership of it or against membership of it for decades now. It's always been the case. And within that party, it is my contention that the arguments and the visions for the direction of the country amongst the individual people within the party, those arguments and those discussions are genuine. I believe that. That is what led to Cameron calling the referendum. Cameron called the referendum because the party, partly because of the rise of Nigel Farage and the success that Farage had in whatever you might think of him, Farage, and I'm no fan of any of these people. I loathe them all equally, although loathe is a very strong thing to say. I don't hate anybody. But Farage got it on the agenda. And Farage did more than most people in mainstream media anyway to show people just what a fraud and a sham the European Union is and how anti-democratic it is. That stirred up murders within the Conservative Party and the Conservative Party membership. This is true. And the whole thing came about again, the whole talk about the European Union. Cameron decided to put the referendum out there. I'm not suggesting for a minute that Cameron did that on his own. I'm not suggesting for a minute that David Cameron was autonomous. Of course not. He is controlled or was controlled by the same people that we talk about often on this programme. But they put it out there. It's my belief that they believed, those really pulling the strings, that the vote would go the way of Remain. That's what I believe. Why didn't they fix it, Richie? I don't know. That has kept me awake nights, to be honest. Because before the referendum, if you remember, my prediction was wrong. I predicted before the referendum that Remain would win. I predicted that because I thought there would be interference in the process. And I was wrong. I'm wrong so often. I put my hands up and I say I was wrong. But I never believed we would be allowed leave, no matter what. Even if it had gone the way of the Brexiteers. And then it turned out it did go the way of the Brexiteers. Now we're seeing, and we have seen for 2.5 years, the dismantling process of the vote of the British people. The same way we saw it in France, in Denmark and in Ireland, where twice people rejected European Union treaties in referenda and twice they were sent back to vote until they got it right, until they voted with the European Union. So Liz, I totally respect your opinion, but it's not a massive distraction. And it's relevant to every man, woman and child on planet Earth. Because it's through political unions like this and trade agreements, that power has been concentrated in the hands of a tiny, tiny minority. That is what it is. People groan when I talk about Brexit. Don't fucking groan. It's deadly serious, this. And I've said 1,000 times how anybody could declare themselves to be socialist. And of course, the great ideology of socialism is that the people should have self-determination. That the people, the public, the people as one collective should have a kind of an autonomy and should have, you know, access to food and to water and to heat and to light, and should be able to control the means of production, and that assets should be made available for the benefit of everybody. That is at the heart of socialism. Well, membership of the fucking European Union is completely incompatible with that ideology. Never understand these fucking fake socialists. Sinn Féin, whom I would have voted for when I was voting. My last election that I voted in was back in 2002. A fake socialist party. Bunch of bullshitters. The Socialist Workers' Party. Morons. All of them. Liars. Trade union movements. Fucking liars. When they say it's important to stay in the European Union. How can you want power for the people? And by the way, you have struggled. You have struggled for hundreds and hundreds of years to try and get your power back from royal families. And then you bought into the idea that you had democracy when, you know, when, I mean, I talked about this again so many times, I don't want to go over old ground. But when parliamentary democracy was given to you by kings and queens, and you fell for that bullshit, and then you realised it was bullshit, and you've been fighting now for hundreds of years to get your power back from your national governments, but now you want to give it to fucking Brussels. So you'll be two steps away at all times from actually having power for the people. It's madness. And it's not a distraction. It's not. This is not a distraction story. What you're seeing here is you're seeing the empire without its clothes, in full glory, cock in hand, displaying itself to people in a way that it never has before. Doesn't matter what you said. Doesn't matter about taking back fishing rights, about taking back control of your borders, about stopping the drain on the resources like the National Health Service and everything else by way of, you know, at least taking control of immigration. It doesn't matter that you want that. We're going to not allow it. Even though you voted 52-48, this is what's happening. And it's important that people see it. Because you're not hearing what I've just told you on national television or radio here in the UK. You're not hearing that. You're not hearing anything like it. And it's vitally important that we talk about it, right? Not all the time, not for 2 hours every day, but we've got to talk about it, okay? So that when it happens, as it will inevitably happen, next week will be a big step towards blocking what people voted for, which is to leave this filthy, undemocratic, tyrannical organisation. So it's important that we talk about it. By the way, Liz, I love you. I'm not having a go at you. A lot of people have been saying that to me. You know, it's a distraction, Richie, and, you know, it's boring. And, yeah, I know, it's repetitive stuff sometimes. I know. Tell me about it. I've got thick skin. You're not going to annoy me. I know it's stuff that can be repetitive. Right, I'm going to have some, again, some Christmas music. Why not, eh? It might calm us all down for a minute. And then we're going to leave Brexit. It's 28 minutes to the top of the hour with the Richie Allen Show. And myself, Richie Allen, going a different route now in a minute. Stay with me. I'm with you till the top of the hour. Maybe a bit longer than that. We'll see. Going to move on. Chris Rea driving home for Christmas on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 26 minutes to 6 because we're live right now. Going to move right on. This was in the Huffington Post today. Let me read this. I referenced this in a tweet that I put out, or that I tweeted a bit earlier today. The Huffington Post, the headline is, "This professor teaches journalism at a top UK university. He's also a 9/11 truther." This professor teaches journalism at a top UK university. He's also a 9/11 truther. And the subheading is, it's ridiculous that Piers Robinson is teaching propaganda. I'll read you some of it and we'll interject with a few comments as we go along. It reads, an academic teaching journalism students at one of the UK's top universities has publicly supported long discredited conspiracy theories about the 9/11 terror attack, HuffPost UK can reveal. Professor Piers Robinson is the chair in politics, society and political journalism at the University of Sheffield, specialising in contemporary propaganda with a particular focus on the current war in Syria, according to Sheffield Uni's website. He is also the co-director of the university's Organisation for Propaganda Studies, which claims to conduct rigorous academic research and analysis of propaganda. Now, before I read more of the article, it is incredibly ironic, and I said this to Robinson himself on Twitter, that he is co-director of propaganda studies. Why is it ironic? Well, I'll tell you more about that in a minute. I'll read the article a bit more. The University of Sheffield's Department of Journalism Studies is one of the most prestigious in the country, blah, blah, blah. But Robinson's work has been described as conspiracy theory driven, completely insulting, and of having no interest in truth or justice. Who said that? You won't believe who said that. A former head of MI6 and a former supreme commander of NATO have both told HuffPost UK that quotes they gave in public have been misinterpreted by Robinson in his lectures to journalism students. Robinson's, imagine that. Piers Robinson must be shitting himself. He's being discredited by a former head of MI6 and a supreme commander of NATO. Give me a break. Robinson's lectures and public appearances are heavily critical of Western governments and media, and he appears on Kremlin-backed channels like RT and Sputnik. During an interview with Sputnik in March, Robinson suggested Russia was being demonised over the poisoning of Sergei Skripal in order to distract from the West's aggressive regime change strategy in the Middle East. In an email to HuffPost UK, Robinson stood by the interview. He said, I have not seen persuasive evidence to attribute blame to the Russian government re Skripal. Fair enough. Neither have I. The article continues, one of Robinson's latest unpublished works is a glowing review of a book titled 9/11 Unmasked by David Ray Griffin, a leading figure in the so-called 9/11 truther movement. The book rejects the established narrative that 19 Al-Qaeda operatives hijacked 4 planes and flew them into the World Trade Center and Pentagon. The book instead suggests explosives were used to bring down the towers, and the book questions whether the planes were even hijacked by terrorists. Oh dear. Oh dear. Robinson provided a quote for the back cover of the book, and he called the book a serious challenge for mainstream academics and journalists to start to ask substantial questions about 9/11 in order to search for the facts and to speak truth to power. He was asked by HuffPost UK if he agrees with the conclusions of David Ray Griffin in his book. Robinson said in an email, my position, as has been the case for some time, is that conclusions detailed in 9/11 Unmasked demonstrate beyond reasonable doubt that significant parts of the official narrative are very likely to be incorrect. Good for you, Piers Robinson. You're about, I would say about, what, about 15 years late to the party. But good for you. Good for you. These are dangerous times, my friend. Dear listener, they're very dangerous times. When newspapers print material which is designed to pressure a university into firing a professor, this is deadly serious. And it's untenable. And it's unfucking acceptable. And neither you, nor I, nor anybody else should accept it. It's disgusting. No real journalist. Now, the guy who wrote this piece, his name is Chris York. He wrote the piece for Huffington Post. No real journalist would do that. Would slant the article in a way that suggests that Robinson is unfit to hold the position he holds at Sheffield University. It's a disgrace. Now, at least York had the decency to send a list of questions to Robinson, and in fairness, the article does print Robinson's responses, or at least some of them. I don't know if they printed all of his responses verbatim, word for word. But the tone of it, as I've said, the tone of the article from the headline to the conclusions is to suggest that Robinson is unfit to lecture or to teach. That is disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And this is a trend that we see, whether it's deplatforming speakers, whether it's trying to get people shut down on Twitter or on Facebook because they have a personal point of view or a personal belief. It is a disgrace. Why don't these people debate Piers Robinson? Wouldn't it be a wonderful debate? I'm a Huffington Post journalist. I think that 9/11 conspiracy theorists are fucking barmy. Do you? Good. Well, why don't you come to Sheffield University and debate the academic in question and ask him why he supported the David Ray Griffin book? Isn't that wonderful? Why don't we make a night of it? Why don't we have a proper debate? Let's get three people to say it's all a load of bollocks, and let's get three people to say, no, there are some very important questions to ask about the 9/11 official story. Why not do that? No, they want to destroy people. Interestingly enough, some of Robinson's students took to Twitter to say that far from trying to impose his worldview on the classes, he was actually encouraging them to use multiple sources for their information and for their analysis and to think for themselves. It reminds me of my great friend and colleague Kevin Barrett, who was pressured many years ago when he was asking his students to think for themselves and not to be scared about reading materials from so-called subversive sources. Read everything, said Kevin. Watch Fox News. Watch it all. Read everything. Question everything. Don't believe anything. Don't take it at face value. Of course, they tried to destroy Kevin Barrett. And that's what they're doing. It's terrible. Now, I had a run-in with Piers Robinson on Twitter. And this is where I said earlier on, it's ironic that he lectures in propaganda. Because Piers, whom I don't know, but I would absolutely support him here in this nonsense, this idea that he's some sort of danger because he asks questions about 9/11. But I pointed out that it was ironic. You see, I called Piers Robinson's pal, Vanessa Beely, a propagandist and a misomaniac around a year ago, not for the first time, because of things that she was saying on Twitter and on Facebook. And he lost his shit. He was outraged that I would challenge some of the things that she was saying. And I pointed out that it was ironic that an expert in propaganda would defend the spoofer Vanessa Beely, who is a Syrian state propagandist, and no more than a Syrian state propagandist. And I challenged him to debate propaganda and journalism on this programme, but he declined to do so. You know, I said that before. Vanessa Beely's not a journalist. I will support forever her right and others like her to say what they want to say, but I will retain my rights to challenge it. You know, you can't say it's the greatest honour of your life to meet President Assad. You can't say publicly that you will conceal evidence that the Syrian army has tortured people because it would help Assad's enemies. Beely said all that. I said she's no journalist, no truth teller, just a worthless propagandist, and useless in the effort to educate reasonably minded people that Bashar al-Assad is not the bad guy, because he's not. The Syrian government is not the bad guy. He's not the bad guy. He hasn't caused the situation that we see in Syria today, as some of us have been saying for 10 years and even longer. But when you embrace him, say it's the best thing that ever happened to you that you met him, and then when you tell another journalist that you know that the Syrian army has been torturing people, but you will conceal that because it doesn't look good for the government, well, then you are a pathetic propagandist. Now, I'm not going over old ground. I said this, and Robinson lost his shit. And I said, well, that's very ironic, because you're supposed to be an expert in propaganda. And these Syrian mythomaniac commentators are just propagandists. They're not journalists. Never were, never will be. And he lost his mind. Look, Piers Robinson should not have to put up with a media campaign to have him sacked. No academic should. It's refreshing that the guy is opening minds at Sheffield without imposing his views, as his students have testified. Brilliant, and more power to Piers Robinson. I knew an amazing woman at Salford University called Dr. Carol O'Reilly, another woman who encouraged the students not to take as fact what you read in the papers, what you get on TV, but open yourself up to multiple sources of information, challenge it all, and then decide what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. That's the right way to go about it, right? And if, and I'm going to say this for the final time, if even, going back to some of Piers Robinson's friends, if you put information in the public domain, expect it to be challenged. Don't lose your mind when what you say and the veracity of it is questioned. Accept it. Suck it up, buttercup. That's the way of the world. I've been doing this for years. The amount of times that I get sent videos. Hey, Richie, some guy that you never heard of, who's got his own bedroom channel in outer Nebraska or outer Mongolia, he's calling you a shill, Richie. Do you really think I'm going to watch it, number one? And number two, that's his absolute right. Good luck to him. Fantastic. If you're going to say stuff and put stuff in the public domain, accept that it's going to be challenged. That's the way it is. Piers Robinson is learning that lesson now. But not in a nice way. Should not be inferring, no journalist should infer that because he doesn't believe the official narrative of 9/11, that he's not fit to teach, when his students have come out and said that the man is not trying to force his ideas on anybody, Piers Robinson. Right, moving on. Smartphones have driven hospital admissions for stress and anxiety to rise by 37% in the past decade because people never switch off. Did you hear that? Smartphones driving hospital admissions. People are getting stressed and becoming anxious because of their smartphone usage. This is all true. The Daily Mail reporting on this today, but we've been talking about it for years now. The figures are startling. 15,000 cases admitted to hospital in 2017 to 2018. That's hospital admissions for stress and anxiety. Up from just 11,500 in 10 years. So-called experts are attributing this rise to, they are making the correlation between this rise and the never-ending usage of smartphones. It's madness. It's madness. It is madness. It really is. 37% increase in the number of admissions for white-collar workers. The rise in smartphone culture is thought to be to blame, writes the Mail, as checking emails outside of working hours means professionals never really switch off. I love the future Mrs. Allen. Amazing woman. Most corporate companies now expect people to be on at all times. My partner Caroline's amazing. She asserted from day one, and she works for a very well-known company. She's an accountant. From day one, when she accepted the offer, they headhunted her. She was headhunted. When she accepted the offer, she said, no weekends ever, no emails after work ever, end of story, that's the way it's going to be, or no way, Jose. And that's the way she lives. When she leaves work, the phone is switched off. She doesn't switch it on again till she goes to work the following day. Doesn't go anywhere near it at the weekend. But many people are not in that position. Companies expect them to be on all the time. Last year, The Independent said that Brits checked their phones 28 times a day or 10,000 times a year. But other surveys suggested it could be four times more than that. Surveys in the US say folks go to their phones 100 times a day. Wow. Here's a story in the Daily Mail today. Bombarded by the smart meter bullies. Readers pestered with calls and texts, threatened with bailiffs, and have appointments made without asking. This is unbelievable. Fiona Parker writing in the Daily Mail. Households are being badgered into getting a smart meter even after they have refused one. Following the Daily Mail smart meter investigation, readers have complained they are being bombarded with calls, emails, letters and texts. Some say they feel harassed after being sent unasked for installation appointments, which they struggled to cancel. They are given installation appointments which they have not solicited, and then they struggle to cancel these. In one shocking case, an SSE customer was threatened with bailiffs and incorrectly told the meters were a legal requirement. This is tyranny. This is tyranny. Ofgem, the regulatory body, the energy regulatory body, has told firms that they can recontact households which have previously refused a smart meter just to see if they have changed their mind, but it is not a legal obligation. So it means that they can harass and badger and annoy customers until customers eventually give in. Imagine the bastards at SSE threatened somebody with the bailiffs if they didn't take the smart meter. Mental. Do you want to hear somebody called Jerry Day? Jerry is an electronics expert from California. Not too many people have done more in terms of looking into smart meters than Jerry Day. Listen to what Jerry says about what a smart meter actually is.
We are now entering the brave new world of smart meters. That means your electric meter will do so much more than just show how much electricity you use. The new smart meters are watching you. They sense all kinds of goings-on. They see when you turn something on or off. They see how many watts your electric toothbrush pulls. They send the record of that little event over wireless networks, bouncing through your neighbor's smart meters, all the way to the power company, where they keep record of all your electric consumption volumes and patterns every minute of every day, and store that data forever on computers that you'll never get to see. That data shows when you are at home, shows when you're sleeping, shows when you're on vacation, when you have visitors, when you use a lamp, a power tool, some extra computers, and if you look like you're running a business out of your home. It even senses when you bootleg energy off the grid. Your smart meter data shows a vivid profile of your personal living patterns and whether or not you were at home on the night of the murder. This is not electrical metering. This is personal surveillance. This is a search without a warrant every day. This is your personal private life going straight out through your electric meter to the power company, to the government, to the police, to the insurance company, to anyone who cuts a deal with your power company to look at your life under a microscope. Sorry, it's actually worse than that. People who don't cut a deal can get your information too by simply intercepting the wireless signal spewing from the side of your house. Yes, smart meters are radio transmitters. Here's how you tell. This one is a 1-watt radio station licensed by the FCC. On this all-news radio station, every detail of your electrical life is shooting off to some institutional data center somewhere. Already, the police in Ohio, Texas, British Columbia, and places I don't know about are regularly using smart meter data to pinpoint marijuana grow houses, enforce business licenses, and punish people for doing things in the privacy of their own homes that you were not supposed to do, but they wouldn't even know you were doing if they weren't spying on you.
Yeah, legal wiretapping, eh? Brilliant stuff from Jerry Day there. Must give Jerry a ring and get him on the program. It's 7 minutes to the top of the hour. And finally for today, and finally, shorter show today. Don't worry, back to 2 hours tomorrow. I've got some things to do, which I need to attend to. But it's been a packed hour. Thank you. You're very welcome. It's been a packed hour. I'm going to leave you with something funny. Have you heard of Brett Favre? Well, he's an amazing quarterback, apparently. Very successful quarterback. And he's made the news in the United States of America because he was duped by a white supremacist group into making a short video where apparently he said something that is anti-Semitic. Did he? Let's go to ABC News for the story about Brett Favre, the quarterback.
Now to that apology from Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre after he says he was tricked into recording an anti-Semitic message by a hate group. And
How do you get tricked into recording an anti-Semitic message by a hate group? Well, we'll find out.
Group, and he is apparently not the only celebrity to fall for it. ABC's Paula Faris is here with more. And Paula, Favre says he is sickened by this.
Yeah, he feels awful about this, Cecilia. Good morning. It happened on a new app called Cameo. This is where users can connect directly to celebrities to get a personalized message without going through publicists or managers. Now, the celebrity reviews what the user wants them to say. They can accept or reject. In this case, Brett Favre accepted, unaware of the coded language, and this morning, he's apologizing. This morning, Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre is on the defensive, apologizing after he says he was tricked into making an anti-Semitic video for a hate group.
Brett Favre here with a shout out.
That clip, which we will not play in full.
They won't play it in full, so you're thinking it must be bad, right? It must be bad. They won't play it, so it must be bad.
Contains phrases that may seem innocent at first, but...
Because it contains... We can't show the clip because it contains phrases which might seem innocent at first, but are really anti-Semitic.
It's actually filled with coded language.
Coded language?
Which that's recognizable to those who hate Jews.
Ah, that's recognizable to those who hate Jews.
People.
God bless and take care.
That video was made with a website called Cameo. It's a new platform which allows people to hire celebrities to...
Brilliant. So Cameo is where you can hire celebrities to do a short video for you. You can pay $500, $50, depending on the celebrity, $1,000, and they'll make a short video for you. And a white supremacist group, apparently, gave $500 to Brett Favre and said, read out this statement, Brett, on video. Send it to us and we'll pay you the money. What did Brett say? Do you want me to read it? Because I can't find the audio. I can't find it anywhere. It has been swept clean from Tinternet. What did Brett say? Brett, by the way, Super Bowl 31, Green Bay Packers. I had to look that up. I don't know anything about American football. Brett said, listen, Brett Favre here with a shout out to the Handsome Truth and the GDL boys. You guys are patriots in my eyes, so keep waking them up and don't let the small get you down. Keep fighting too, and don't ever forget the USS Liberty and the men and women who died on that day. God bless and take care. That's all he said. USS Liberty, that's all he said. How is it racist? How is it coded language? Ah, well, Zionists don't like too much talking about the attack on the USS Liberty. The US naval vessel, which was in international waters when it was torpedoed by the Israelis during the 1967 Six-Day War. This happened in June of 1967. I know this stuff usually off by heart, but I've not written down any bullet points here other than the stuff that you don't forget. 34 killed, 170 injured. And covered up by the US, covered up at the highest levels by Lyndon Johnson. An attack on America by Israel. The USS Liberty was a reconnaissance ship, or what you would call a listening ship, right? It was a listening ship. It could hear things. It was like a spy ship, for want of a better word. Why did the Israelis blow it out of water? Well, for a number of reasons, maybe, including one, that the ship had come across evidence of Israeli war crimes. That's just one theory. So these guys, who are apparently white supremacists, they trick Brett Favre into making this video. All he says is, don't ever forget the USS Liberty and the men and women who died on that day. And somebody has deemed that statement is anti-Semitic. There is nothing fucking anti-Semitic about that statement whatsoever. Americans should be asking themselves, why has there been a media blackout? Why has there been a political blackout on discussing what happened to the men and women, if there were women, of the USS Liberty during the Six-Day War, the listening ship that probably came across or was intercepted information that proved that the Israelis were committing war crimes, which they were, of course, which they do. It's the default position of Israel committing genocidal war crimes against the people of Palestine and other peoples as well. We're going to go now and love you and leave you for this Thursday. I promise you there'll be no Christmas music on Thursday's programme. It's tomorrow, Thursday. No Christmas music tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. The programme will begin repeating very soon. It'll be on Podomatic. It'll be on YouTube as well. Look after yourselves and one another. Thanks for being with me today. Leaving you with Wham!